There is a story told about the Dalai Lama by friends of mine who were there. So maybe it happened. He was at giving teachings in a big auditorium in Arizona many years ago. And as he does, he was teaching from some text. And then there was time for questions. And some person stood up, and the question was how can one get enlightened as quickly as possible? And the Dalai Lama apparently stood still for a long time. He didn't say anything. And then apparently he started crying, or there's a tear coming down his cheek. And then he spoke about, I can't paraphrase it even, but he spoke something like how sad it was to approach awakening as something to be in a hurry to get. A certain kind of maybe conceit, that that's what it's about, to get it quickly. So the next parami is patience. That's how it's usually translated into English. Kshanti or Kanti. And it's a very rich word in Sanskrit and Pali. That probably our word patience doesn't quite do justice with. Unless the word patience we understand to contain within it qualities of awakening or freedom. That patience is not just putting up with something or waiting contentedly or relaxedly for something. But that in the very qualities of being patience we can find something of our freedom. In these paramitas, the next paramita after what today's is virya, effort. And I find it kind of touching, actually, that before we get to effort, there's three whole paramitas. For those people who want to just jump in and get to work right away, it's important to get this practice stuff over with quickly so we can do other important things in our life. There was a video spoof kind of made at Spirit Rock about Spirit Rock some years ago. A little 10-minute thing about this man who tremendous confidence, maybe arrogance, came to practice at Spirit Rock and then during one of the sittings, he went outside and called his girlfriend and said, "Oh yeah, there was a sitting just now, and I nailed it in 10 minutes. Yeah, it'd be nice. Then we can go to the beach or create a startup or invest in stocks or speed dating. All kinds of great things to do, right? But I don't think that's where freedom is found. So that virya, the effort part, is the fourth parami. And what comes first is dana, sila, and kshanti. Dana, sila, and kshanti. Or to paraphrase, generosity, non-harming, and patience. And it's kind of like these are the foundations for making the effort in practice. There can be certain attitudes, the attitudes of generosity, the attitude of non-harming, and the attitude, now this wonderful thing, shanti, patience. When the first years of my Buddhist practice, when I sat retreats, I had a lot of challenges, a lot of difficulties. It seemed almost, they felt like some of them were intolerable. How could I manage to stay? And I had two little sayings that I said to myself that helped me through. And one of them was, what if this is forever? What if this is forever? And there was something about saying that, and I had to say it, you know, repeatedly. There was something about saying that I had space. Rather than thinking it's hopeless, I actually relaxed or surrendered or opened or kind of didn't fight it anymore, didn't resist, just for a couple of moments. And then I, what if this is forever? And then the other one I had to do sometimes, which I hold them together, I would just say, moment after moment, if I can just get through this moment, moment. And there was just like, so one was endless time, and the other one was just a little bit less ambitious. Can I get through this moment? And in both those, it created a little bit of space in my mind, my heart, and in my just ability to be with what is. And there was little sliver, hints of kind of freedom or peace or something in the midst of the burning and churning and challenges that I had. Just be with it. And that's all I tried to do, was just be with it. I wasn't trying to fix it or get rid of it, or I didn't know how. It didn't occur to me that I should do something about it. I had to figure out some way how to be with it. The gesture for generosity for me, it is kind of the hand holding something and stretching out to offer something. It's an open hand, moving forward, offering. The gesture for sila, for ethics or virtue, you might have a different one, but for me it's putting my hands together, flat together, right in front of me, and standing or sitting upright, tall, straight. So there's some kind of integrity and dignity and value that's preserved or being expressed or being oneness or just here. And the gesture for patience is the same thing, but not quite as, you know, flat, the hands together, a little kind of relaxed, and bowing forward. Not really submission, which sometimes bowing forward means, but kind of bowing to the truth, bowing to the inevitable, allowing it to be the way it is, trusting the moment, trusting this that's inevitable. If it's inevitable, then I'm not going to, should I fight it? Protest? So the ability to not succumb to being in a hurry, not be angry or annoyed with how things are going, the ability to be present and accept what is inevitable, what is here, the ability to accept the truth, contains within it the seeds of peace, the seeds of freedom, awakening. So patience is not enduring, just this is terrible, I might as well just endure until it passes or something changes, and then later I'll get on to the work of practice and liberation. But in that movement of releasing ourselves from impatience, from releasing ourselves from annoyance and anger, and releasing ourselves from greed and wanting, and releasing ourselves from the conceit of being the one to get enlightened, or one to get practice, or one to get something, to have something to show for our hard work here. You probably, many of you know the story of the brash, usually this man, you know, usually it's a man, this story. Maybe you know why, I don't know why. Poor men. Arrogant, aristocrat, capable, smart, gotten what he wants in the world, usually. And he comes to the monastery, and he wants to come be a monk, and he asks the abbot, "How long will it take for me to get enlightened?" And the abbot says, "About 10 years. And he says, "Well, I'm smart, I'm capable, I know how to make effort. If I really try hard, how long will it take?" "Oh, in that case," the abbot said, "it'll take 20 years. So patience is not giving up, but rather freeing up. It's freeing something up in us. What do we have to free up so that we can be with what is? What do we free up so we can be with the challenges that we have, the difficulties? What can we free up so we can be with what is not to our liking? So the tradition talks about different kinds of patience, and the first I mentioned is patient perseverance. So steadily going, keep doing it. Show up for the next breath, and then the next breath, and the next breath, or the next step. Go to the next sitting, go to the next walking, just steadily, persistently, just day in, day out. Minute in, minute out, second in, second out. Just keep, stay, hold the course, hold the course. Keep going with practice. Patient perseverance with all the ups and downs that can happen. And it's a beautiful thing to just hold the course. The people I've been very inspired by some people who persist against great odds, just keep doing it. They have some great faith, or maybe sense of commitment, or something. They just, you know, keep doing it and keep doing it. And there too, there's freedom to be found in not giving up and not succumbing to our fears or disappointments or our logic that isn't working or something. But just to kind of steadily keep going. And how do we find our freedom in that perseverance? So it's not just bearing down or tightening up or stubbornness to kind of keep going, but how do we find openness, a lightness, perhaps even a joy? Keep going, keep going. One of the things that certainly has helped me in perseverance has been to see how many times it wasn't my efforts that made the difference, except that my efforts were required. I have to make some effort, I had to show up, I had to practice, but that's all I could do. The results were not of my making. And to see how something starts moving and unfolding and growing, something seems to reveal itself, some movement towards towards the wholesome, the good. And so to learn to have faith in that, just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. So many times in my life, I haven't known what to do in situations where all I could rely on was my mindfulness, my willingness to be present for the situation. And something about just being present somehow creates, somehow affects the situation or helps the situation resolve itself or reveal itself. And to see this so many times, even when I've despaired or it's been a great challenge, I'll just show up. I keep showing up. We had, once in my now over 25 years of being a Buddhist teacher, it's only once, and so I hope none of you, when you hear the story, think that you're number two. But I had once, I had a student who came on many retreats with me, and his challenges in practicing were huge. And he practiced really hard. And it seemed like he was so sincere and so dedicated. And he was just, like, it was like banging his head against the wall. It was like somehow, this is where maybe my shortcoming, where I started to feel concerned for this person who just like wasn't, nothing was moving, budging, no change. He was such a hard time, so difficult, but he kept trying and trying. And he wasn't complaining, he never complained. But maybe I was getting uncomfortable about it, I was wondering about my responsibility, what should I say? And so this is the only time I thought, maybe I should tell this person to try something different. Maybe, practice, wasn't, maybe you should do something else. But I didn't. I thought it was like, how could I? This guy is so sincere and so much faith and he's practicing so hard. And, I couldn't do that. I can't do that. So he was on a retreat with me. And then about 6 months later, he talked to me and he said, that retreat where it was so hard for me? And he said, that was so great. I didn't know at the time, but since that retreat's over, I've gone through a lot of difficulties in my life, and I knew how to be present for them from what I learned that retreat. Wasn't that great? I thought that, wow, I'm glad I didn't say anything to him. you never know, where it comes. So for him, he got tremendous benefit from it when it really counted in his life. I've also known people who have come to IMC for years, and every week, and I kind of thought that maybe they weren't changing very much. Were they really listening? It seemed like they had kind of a difficult life and difficult mind. I don't know, it just didn't seem like nothing was kind of going in or something. And I think of one person in particular, and then she was dying. And we would go spend time with her dying. And then it was obvious how much she'd taken in. And she died, so much peace and equanimity and freedom. People in the community who kind of avoided her while she was healthy couldn't help but go visit her when she was dying because there was this radiance and peacefulness. And whatever she had taken things in, but now she had a chance to apply them in a way maybe she never had before. So these are all, for me, little stories that I think of when I think of persistence and sincerity, dedication. Keep going. And I know that for myself, so many times in my practice, I've just kept going. And it's the Dharma somehow unfolds in spite of myself even. So the patient perseverance, just keep going. keep practicing. And I think because it's such an important point, it isn't, I'm repeating myself, it isn't enduring. It isn't gritting your teeth necessarily and kind of just being dutiful. But there's something to be found in the keep going of freedom. Because perhaps we're learning in that process not to give in to fear and resistance and anger and disappointment and comparative thinking, and comparing ourselves to others, and ambition. There's freedom to be found. Just keep steadily. And then there's patience under insult, the second kind of kshanti. I think it was Chogyam Trungpa who said something like, practice is one continuous insult. Some of you might know the quote better than me. And I'm not sure what he meant, but it's maybe an insult. He was big in his teachings about using the word ego in a negative way, you know, being egotistical. And so I think he meant that practice was an insult to our ego. Somehow the idea that we can sustain some kind of conceited sense of self, that to represent ourselves, hold ourselves up in a certain kind of way that is not really true. And if it's not true, yeah, you remember the quote? Practice is one insult after another. I'm glad we didn't advertise that when we publicized for this retreat. But halfway through the retreat, maybe it's okay, especially after I talked about the importance of persistence. So I don't feel that way myself personally. That's always an insult one, but it's kind of interesting if someone would say that, you know. So patience, persistence, you know, patience under insult, all the challenges that come along, insults to our expectations, our ambitions that we have. You know, we know people who come to retreats with expectations, and it can be pretty hard once you have expectations. One of the great expectations to have is to have a good retreat and come back to have the same good retreat next time. And I've known people who have been crushed miserably by the expectations that they were going to come and try to get the same thing again, trying and trying. When I was my first sesshins at Zen Center, I had the idea that I could kind of sit kind of well because I'd sat just a little bit at home and it got me a little bit calm because I just wasn't running around. And so I came to sesshin and I thought, this is easy. I'll just, you know, settle in. Well, it was easy for the first one sitting, a little bit. But then I sat with sitting more than I ever did at home. And then because I thought it was easy, I just applied myself. The very way in which I applied myself, with some expectation, with an agenda, with a kind of conceit, I'm the one who's going to do this. I made myself miserable. And it didn't work. And so the reasonable strategy for, just didn't think about it, but when practice didn't work, it was to get angry. So I got angry. And then I would try harder. But just try harder the same way, the way that didn't work. And it would not work even worse. And so then I get more angry. And then I would, I guess I was persistent, so. And so I would just, you know, kept trying, you know, and it was awful. It just got worse and worse. And it wasn't until the third day of the Sesshin that I would reach rock bottom. It was just so bad. And finally, there was nothing else to do but just give up. I just give up. And that's when the retreat began. It had to be so bad before I escaped. Something gave up. I released myself from the expectations, from this way of doing, that I'm in charge. And then I learned something about a very different kind of effort. Kind of the effort of non-effort. Persistent being, so there had to be persistence, but persistence of just staying present here. And not in the control tower, you know, trying to make something happen, trying to see something, but staying peaceful or staying at ease or easeful with whatever is. Because in that letting go, that I had rock bottom, just give up, there was a kind of peace or kind of freedom or easefulness there. And so if I could just stay there, kind of hang out, and use that place, not to try to make anything happen, not to try to make do anything, but just to meet or allow, be present for what was, what is. And so there was no leaning into, there was no bearing down, there was no hoping for something. It was just, I don't know, like having the hand open so you can feel the breeze blowing over it, gentle breeze. It's light touch. So patience under insult, but you know, it's also, you know, insults that people do or on us. And patience under insult can sound like when people are being angry with us or yelling at us or insulting us, that we're somehow supposed to just kind of put up with it. But I think this kshanti is a much higher, more noble thing to do than just put up with it. It's to have a sense of freedom or ease or well-being that's here, and have the ability or the commitment or something not to sacrifice it under insult from someone else, not to give it away, not to lose it, but somehow understand there's something precious here, stay true to our freedom, stay true to what's beautiful and valuable here. There's a story of the Buddha, of someone coming to the Buddha and insulting him, angry with the Buddha. So he showed up and started insulting the Buddha. And when the Buddha had a chance to say something, he asked him, he said, do you ever have something like, do you ever have guests come to your house? And he said, well, yes. And do they sometimes come and bring food, you know, to offer, you know, for the meal or something, potluck or something? And they say, yes, or a gift. But if you don't accept the gift, who does it belong to? Oh, then it belongs to the person who brought it. In the same way, I don't accept your insults. So where do they stay? So you know, so it's not. Again, I don't. Hopefully, kshanti is not a bearing and gritting a teeth, but because a place of freedom, of ease, of lightness, of preserving something that we think is more valuable than becoming angry. And then the last, the third form of patience is the patient's acceptance of truth. And that can take many different forms, what is true. But the ability to accept the truth. After I'd been practicing, at the San Francisco Zen Center for some years, it became glaringly obvious that how much I was operating under some idea of self that was false, and that I spent time trying to convince everyone else that this idea was true. So how I talk, this is social gymnastics, and try to make an impression on people. And it was one of the great things of coming to San Francisco Zen Center when I came to live there was that the social games that I was used to playing, trying to make an impression on people, was not reciprocated. Like people who just wouldn't respond. They were just kind of just, and it became kind of a mirror for me because I would try and nothing would happen. So, you know, the insult stayed with me, right? Or the gift stayed with me. So that's one of the reasons I kind of actually went there, was because I valued so much getting that mirroring. But after some years, I could feel that the next task that I had to do was to somehow let go of this false sense of self that I was kind of trying to operate under, that I no longer believed in, but I couldn't quite, I felt like I was on the edge of a precipice. And it was just, you know, if I let go of it, I'd fall over the precipice. Was kind of, I could feel the fear. So I didn't know what to do, but I was going to go practice in Asia, in Japan. And so I said, I think I need a ritual to help me. So the ritual was, maybe it's silly, but I'm not responsible for what my mind thinks always. And so the thought that was crossing the international date line in the Pacific, that would be my ritual. When I crossed that, then I would, let go. So I can't tell you that the dateline worked. But I think it made a difference. I think what it did was it set a certain momentum in place in my psyche, so that with that thing that I thought I had to let go of over the next while when I was in Asia, imperceptibly something started to shift and change. And so much of it, kind of the time I came back, I could feel was not there anymore. And I kind of, so the, you know, in a certain way I'd accepted the truth that this was false. That was nice, but I was afraid of it, you know, I knew what I had to, I kind of felt I had, you know, it's time to let go. So the acceptance of the truth. For many people, part of the acceptance of what's true is to learn to accept our shortcomings. My assumption is everyone has shortcomings. It's not a personal fault to have a shortcoming. It's like it's just what comes with being human, probably, a lot of it. When I was ordained at Zen Center as a Zen priest, I didn't have much appreciation for ritual. So this idea of going through this ceremony of ordination, I wasn't thinking about it much as just, I don't know, some steps you go through because I wanted to become a monk, but it was just the gateway to becoming a monk. I didn't think about the ritual much. But I was surprised how big effect it had on me after I went through it in a variety of ways. But one of the effects it had was, when you become a Zen priest, you know, you become kind of a public person. You kind of, your vow, your commitment, what you're living, your practice, kind of becomes public. You can see, oh, you shave your head and wear robes. So I think that's partly why. So I became much more aware of my shortcomings. I became much more sensitive to my shortcomings. And at the same time, it was more okay to have them. Because in the language of myself back then was, now being ordained, I'm a child of the Buddha. And the thing of being a child of the Buddha. So it wasn't like I was okay to have them. I just continued going, being angry with people and all the different things I could, funny things I could do. But this, I thought it was really great to become more aware of my shortcomings and more okay having them. Acceptance of the truth. Acceptance I had these issues, these things going on, but I wasn't so troubled by them, but I was committed to trying not to live by them or somehow heal them or overcome them somehow. So the acceptance of our shortcomings, the truth of them, oh, this is how it is. Not hiding or pretending and avoiding. This is how it is. And I think that anyone who does this kind of practice we're doing here will find the practice a lot easier if you're willing to acknowledge your shortcomings, your challenges, whatever's going on, and then just assume you're a child of the Buddha, or child of Avalokiteshvara, or just a child of the world, that you know, you're accepted for who you are. It's okay. And then there's the acceptance of the truth that involves accepting the nature of impermanence, that things are always changing, that things we want, things we like and have might go away sooner than we want, things that we don't want to have happen will happen. It's constant change and flow. And there's a truth to that. And there's some kind of freedom again, and peace, or well-being, or something, some sincerity, or something. I don't know what the right word is. A rightness to recognize the constancy of change. Oh, even though it's unfortunate sometimes, what happens? It's change. It's the way of nature for things to change and unfold. I heard a comedian once, a little bit sarcastically, talk about the miracle of human birth, and then said, yes, it's a miracle. There's 6-7 billion people who went through the miracle. You know, it's how many times does it have to happen when it's no longer a miracle? There's so many things, in the universe, when you look at the universal quality of it, it's pretty special. Birth, death, all these things. But the regularity and the frequency and the naturalness of it, the dharma-ness of it, is there some kind of freedom in accepting it, rather than resisting it or being troubled by it or angry or despairing? And then there's the acceptance of suffering. This world is full of suffering. Not just our own, but that of others. And is there a kind of freedom to be found in the acceptance of that suffering? This is where the truth of that suffering, this is where the English word acceptance probably doesn't do justice to it. Because to say the word acceptance, it seems like almost like condoning or just allowing or just kind of like being too passive around it. So I don't know what a better word is, but maybe being open to it. Sometimes I think the best words are negative words. So rather than saying acceptance, it means non-resistance to, or non-contention, or non-despairing, or non-contraction, not closing down, not turning away, but staying open, staying present, staying here. And part of the value of this is that we all have really good hearts. And if we can learn how to not turn away and stay open, have kshanti in all these circumstances, that this gives a chance for this good heart of ours to begin to blossom, to come forth, and to have this seed of freedom, of awakening, of compassion and love that's in our hearts sprout and grow and bloom is one of the great tasks of life. And what's quite something is it's a lot of has to do with getting out of the way of it. And this kshanti, I think, is a way of getting out of the way. Staying, somehow having the strength, the ability, the patience, the ability to not close down, not give up, not despair, not get angry, not resist, but stay open. Keep the heart open. Stay with us. Stay here in this world with your good heart. And let it unfold. Let it move. Let it do what it needs to do. It's a very generous thing to let your heart unfold and let it do what it needs to do. So as a way of ending this talk, perhaps we can all come back into the meditation posture. Below your thinking mind, in the depths of your being, perhaps there's something that resonates with kshanti, with patience. Something that patience, the paramita of patience, resonates or awakens or touches. And out of that depth of your being, maybe there's a way of sitting here, present, open to what is. With a sense of ease. Here.